choose respect.
Bienvenidos a mis padres fantástico y bellos. Mi amo es Jedly, and this is the We Choose Respect Worldwide Parentcast. I want to thank you so very, very much for being here today. It shows that you love your kids, and loving your kids is going to make all the difference in the world. I'm so excited. Our guest today comes to us from Cape Town, South Africa. His name is Robin Booth, and he is an internationally recognized, internationally renowned educational expert. You know, I'm very excited for Robin being here. He's going to share with us some fantastic insights into our kids and how they can learn and what they need to learn moving forward so they can be successful as they become adults. The world really is changing. The needs for a successful career are changing as well. Robin has some great insights. You're going to love to hear that. Hey, I'm real excited because my school year season, my performance season for the 2015-2016 school year started last week in beautiful Vermont. I was up in Bennington County, I think it is, in southwestern Vermont. Two beautiful schools, Pownell Elementary School. It was a return engagement there. And in the afternoon, I went over to meet some new friends at Bennington Elementary School. Fantastic kids. They really loved the show We Choose Respect. They were really motivated to get up every morning to make the choice to respect themselves, to respect each other, and to respect their community. I would love to share this message with the kids in your community. Please visit my website, wechooserespect.com. Click on the live show booking information button at the top of the page to find out how I can bring my exciting school assembly to your community. Hey, in addition to Robin Booth being on the program today, we have a musical guest. It is a return guest. His name is Chris Hardy. He is going to share his song Space Cast with us at the end of the program. Hey, listen, please visit audibletrial.com/respect. audibletrial.com/respect. When you go there, sign up for their free 30-day trial membership. I want you to do that for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, it's a great service. When you sign up, you get to download a free audiobook. You get to pick that audiobook from over 180,000 different titles. You get to keep the audiobook forever. If you cancel the trial membership any time during the first 30 days, you get to keep the book. It costs you absolutely nothing. That audiobook will play on your iPhone, your Kindle, your MP3 player, your Android. And when you go to audibletrial.com/respect and you sign up for their free 30-day trial, in addition to the free audiobook, Audible is going to be supporting the Parentcast. And that's real important. You know, we bring this show to you for... It's absolutely free. There's no subscriptions. Work hard to put it together, to get the guests together, to communicate with them all around the world. We really need the support. So please, audibletrial.com/respect. Get your free audiobook. Support the podcast. Now get ready to sit back and get some real wisdom coming to us from Cape Town, South Africa.
This is the We Choose Respect podcast.
Woohoo! Hey, ladies and gentlemen, on the line with me right now from Cape Town, South Africa. This really is becoming the worldwide Parentcast. I'm so excited. I want to welcome to the show Robin Booth. Robin is an international parenting expert and coach, and he's also an educational expert. He works with schools to help them develop an emotional intelligence with their schools, and it's really fascinating stuff. First off, Robin, welcome to the Parentcast.
Jed, thanks so much. Great to be here with you.
And before we go any further, I know you folks, you're going to have a lot of interest in getting to know more about Robin and his writings and his work. You can visit his website. It's robinbooth.co, not .com, .co, Z-A, or as Robin told me, Z-A?
Z-A, that's correct. So yeah. robinbooth.co.za.
Excellent. Well, first off, let's just get to it. One of the things that caught my attention in our various emails back and forth in preparation for the Parentcast is you're talking about how education is changing and that it's not just about preparing for a job anymore. Can you expand on that a little bit, please?
Sure, Jed. I mean, such a great question. And I think that if if you ask any parent and any educationalist out there, there's unanimous agreement that what currently is happening in schools worldwide, not just in the States, not just in South Africa, not just in Europe, but worldwide, we all know that we're not meeting the requirements of what we truly believe within ourselves is possible and what we're wanting for our children. And that doesn't mean now that we're talking about really alternative, way out approaches. We're just talking common sense, the way in which our children interact with each other, the way in which the teachers treat the children, the way in which we're focusing on learning. And I think the major shift that we're seeing in education is that primarily it came out of the industrial age, where we needed to prepare for a skill to enter into a career, and it was a lifelong job or career. Mm-hmm. I mean, my dad, when he started his job, you know, he started in his early 20s and he basically retired from in the same company. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, we moved into the information age, which was kind of my generation. So then the early 1990s, the 2000s, where suddenly we had access to internet, to information, and suddenly schools were saying, well, hang on, this isn't just about information delivery to our learners. It's actually something more. There's a quest for something greater than just knowledge. There's a thirst for life. And we then saw the emergence of what we call the relationship age or the age of empowerment. And if you actually look at a lot of logos and brands around worldwide, you'll see they're focusing on people and on the intrinsic value of people, not just on what they produce, but actually what goes on inside of people. Suddenly, your staff in the business world became an asset as opposed to just a cost which you could expend later on. Mm-hmm. So suddenly, the whole focus of that changed. And we unfortunately aren't quite there yet in education, but we're seeing the emergence of that. And if I can, it would certainly lead me on to where I'm seeing education moving more and more, which is moving away from the understanding that we're looking for a career. So the average time frame that a young adult, let's say between the ages of 20 and 30, are staying in one job are not more than 3 years. So mm-hmm. in other words, every 3 years, there's a cycle of these people saying, hang on, I'm looking for something different. And that's costing business a lot of time and energy and money in training these people. And then they're exiting with all their skills. And that's why they're an asset now. So what a lot of companies are doing is they're realizing, wow, we actually need to keep them in-house, but shift their job roles. So what we're seeing now is an emergence not so much on I'm studying through university or school for a career, but I'm starting to study for a kind of job description, a role. In other words, I'm a problem solver or I'm an analyst or I am a marketer as opposed to I'm going to study just to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. So that's the shift we're seeing. And that's very, very exciting because it basically gives so much more scope for us to really tap into our passion and not just to learn some arbitrary information, which is going to be outdated within 2 years after we've learned it.
Now, that sound, is the way you describe it, it sounds ideal. But is that what's really going on? And I can't speak about, you know, the rest of the world, but is that really going on in colleges today? Or are we getting to that point? Are we kind of ratcheting up to get there?
And that, I think, is, you know, for maybe us in this conversation, it seems like absolute no-brainer because, you know, we are already pushing that limit within our own profession. And mm-hmm. we're realizing, hey, what I need today to create a successful business isn't really learnt or taught in school at university. Mm-hmm. And we know that. We can see that. So there are two really interesting things about that. Often what happens in high school is determined by what the requirements or needs are at a university level. And of course, what a university is looking for or is producing is what the business world is looking for and demanding. So there's kind of like a filtering down of the changes that are happening in education are driven by those requirements of the people above that. So businesses looking for X, Y, and Z. So university then provides that. Now university is needing that. So high school provides that. Now, high school needs that, so primary schooling is providing that. So it's a slow trickle-down function that we're seeing. So it's not quite there, but people are realizing that actually what is creating the most successful people are their interpersonal skills, their conflict management skills, their problem-solving skills, their ability to change and adapt and to work within teams, And that is becoming now the demand. So we're seeing that infiltrating at the university level and at the high school level. We are seeing those kinds of those elements being brought into the education system. But unfortunately, it's still coming in as a hidden curriculum, as an extracurricular, as like a, oh, we're also doing this besides all just the normal, you know, reading, writing, and math. And I think until that changes at a fundamental level, we're still going to be stuck in this paradigm of, you know, learners just being on a conveyor belt, learning for some skill, which they're going to wonder, why did I learn this? Because I've never used it.
It's interesting that you say that, because as you're talking about, you know, working in teams and getting along, as someone who's brought in to present motivational magic shows that deal with these kind of issues, and you know the big one for the last 10 or 11 years is dealing with bullying and being respectful of each other, and it's taken as a it's certainly an extra part of their curriculum. You know, we'll bring yes. Jed Lee in October, and he'll tell the kids not to be mean to each other and to stand up for each other and to not hurt each other, not bully each other. And then we don't have to talk about it for the rest of the year. And you're finding that these are the things we really need to work on and teach kids throughout their lives, because they're going to need to be able to work together and to resolve conflicts and, you know, and to be part of a team and whatnot when they get out into the business world.
Correct. And, you know, if you actually ask anyone, and even if I asked yourself, and let's say we're asking those students who you've interacted with, mm-hmm. Maybe in 10 or 15 years' time, we bump into them and we say, hey, what did you remember most about your school days? And what did you value most? And they're going to mention all these little in-between extracurricular activities that formed who they are as people and made the biggest impact on them. And we have to then ask ourselves, well, if this is the case, then surely our education process, one, should not just be about preparing for some unforeseeable future, but two, support our learners in actually living lives today. And I guess in some way, you know, supporting them in making meaning of what's going on so that they actually are, you know, tapping into what is really important for them. I mean, my dad, bless him, I guess. He always said to me, Robin, you're one in a million. Now, you know, if we're talking about, you know, 7 billion people on the planet, I'm not really that special anymore, because one in a million is not going to cut it. So, you know, there's a whole, you know, I was told if I studied hard, if I went to university and got an education, I'd be assured of a job. Those aren't securities anymore. It's changing our, what is needed to succeed in business, the way in which we are generating money or income or an exchange of something for something else is no longer dependent on your education. If you're applying for a job somewhere, there are probably going to be another 100 or 200 people who are going to apply who have the same qualifications of you as you, who probably have more experience, who probably could actually do it better than you or cheaper somewhere else in the world. So what's going to make you different and stand out above everyone else? And that's where we're moving into in education. We're shifting away from just providing a piece of paper that says I am good at this, or actually even just the skill of that. We're saying we're going to create something special within you, kind of like a brand, right? Mm-hmm. We're branding you as you because you bring something different to the organization, and that is unique, and that's what business is now looking for, and that's exciting.
That you took the words right out of my mouth. That is absolutely exciting. But as you said, you know, and I travel around and I deal with school systems throughout the United States and down in Puerto Rico and hopefully in maybe someday South Africa. But
yes.
I don't see a lot of that happening right now. I see a lot of emphasis on standardized tests and teaching to the test and actually taking away you know, a lot of the things that we're talking about. The first thing that gets cut are the enrichment programs, and the first thing that gets cut out of the school day is recess, and we need to, you know, get the kids more structured into read for that 15 minutes instead of letting them go outside and work together and develop their interpersonal skills. So as the schools are moving forward to this ideal that we're speaking about, what are some of the things that parents can do to you know, fill in where the schools aren't quite there yet? What are some of the messages we can give as to our kids as parents and to help them develop these skills?
So I think you're hitting a big nail on the head there, which is it's a bit of a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, the actual people who slow down this transformation of our education system are actually the parents themselves. Because on the one hand, there is a deep knowledge that something needs to change. I want something different, and it makes sense to move in the direction we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. At the same time, when they're actually in that situation, when they're presented with that kind of school system or school structure, it's quite nerve-wracking for them because they don't necessarily understand it. It was different from their experience. Mm-hmm. And there's a sense of, is this actually going to work? Is my child actually going to be more successful going through this kind of school system than just the traditional talk and chalk system? And that's what we experienced. When I opened up my own school, following the similar principles that we looked at, a lot of parents loved it. And the moment they were in it, there was a kind of like an innate nervousness which came through where they're suddenly like, well, is this the right decision? And that's, I think, the challenge for a lot of parents is that they know that something needs to change, but there's a huge amount of courage because it still seems quite alien from, you mm-hmm. know, when you talk to other people about it, for them actually to follow through on that. So that's the first challenge in this transformation process. But what I've experienced most yet, and this is for me what is so also exciting, is that you can still have an incredible education process and learning environment and personal development process in any kind of school environment, whether it is the strictest school environment, whether it is the most flexible one, whether the curriculum is so prescribed or whether it is totally open-ended. You can have everything if the quality of that teacher is such that it makes that classroom come alive. And that's really exciting because we spend so much time focusing on curricula and content and trying to tap into different learners' personality profiles and learning styles and come up with clever ways to deliver content, when actually when you look at what you learned the most in your school, and I invite all of your listeners to actually think back to their own schooling experience, and mm-hmm. you think of the class that you learned the most in and that you had the most value out of, I guarantee you it will be because of the teacher. And if I asked you what about the teacher was the most important thing, it will come down to they respected me. It wasn't that they were the most liberal and the most fun. It was that they respected you to the point that they didn't disrespect you. You didn't actually even have to like them, but they just held the dignity of your own opinion intact. And that is such a fundamental key point. And that's what we've learned. And that's my recommendation and suggestion to parents, is that even though your child might be in a class or a school that you really can see is not really up to scratch, but could be a lot better, what goes on in that home environment, the attitudes and the belief systems that that learner or your child is developing, that's going to set them up for great success later on. Not the school that they're going to, but the way in which they think, the way in which they solve problems, the values that you as a parent are transferring to your children. You're creating a kind of like an internal core, as in core, a value system, a belief of who I am, my self-esteem. That is what makes you stand way above everyone else. It gives you the courage to go out on your own or just to be employed by someone else, because we're not all entrepreneurs. Some of us actually mm-hmm. just like to be told what we need to do and thrive on that. But then it's still something we will do really well and excellently and above everyone else because we value ourselves. And that is something which I believe parents do far more than a school does. And if a parent understands how to do that, wow, then it just sets their child up for huge success.
Well, you know, that reinforces something that I truly believe in, and that is that parents are the first and the best teachers a kid can have. Or I should say, parents should be the first and the best teachers for their kids, because there are a lot of parents who aren't doing it. Talk a little bit about how parents can do that.
So I also agree with your statement about parents are what we actually call are the primary educators of mm-hmm. their children. So mm-hmm. even though a parent might only spend 10% of their time with their children compared to the amount of time they spend in school, the leverage that a primary caregiver has, whether it's a parent, grandparent, or peer, whoever the caregiver is just huge. And what's going to really make the biggest impact there is, unfortunately, not just your love for your child, because that's a key ingredient, But sometimes love just doesn't necessarily show up in the quality of the relationship. And often the quality of our relationships are determined by the quality of our communication within those relationships. And the quality of our communication reflects our own understanding of who we are and obviously what's going on for the other person that we're interacting with. And can we somehow have that awareness and communicate between ourselves and themselves so that we can keep being in relationship to each other? And that is what I focus most of my time and energy on, because that is actually something which you can learn to improve on. The same way that someone spends 6 to 10 years to becoming a doctor or a specialist in medicine, well, imagine if we spent anywhere near that time in actually making a difference in our communication. I mean, when I work with parents and with large groups of parents, I always start one of my presentations by saying, how much do you think that your current school that your child is attending is contributing to your child's success and happiness later on in life? And I get an average between 10 to 40% is what the parents are telling me is going to contribute to their child's happiness and success. And when I say, okay, so if it's between 10 and 40, let's just say 30%, where is the rest of that 70% going to come from? And this is usually where parents start going, okay. And they start realizing that the other 70% is going to come from them and what happens outside of the school environment. Mm-hmm. And then I often say to them, okay, so if you're willing to spend something like $200,000 to $300,000 on just 30% of your child's success and happiness, well, what do you think it's going to cost you then to actually, you know, up the other 70%? And that's, again, a question somehow we don't really grapple with as parents. But it is. You learn different skills and you get amazing breakthroughs straight away. And that's the beauty of communication, is you're aligning your love and intention for your child, your wish for them to do well, or for a wish that they really understand that you're also on their side. But just that wish is not enough. But knowing how to align your words with your actions and all of that, that's a skill set which you can learn, and suddenly you get a transformation of a relationship. And that's also very exciting for me.
It sounds so hopeful, but in other ways, if I was a parent, it might sound kind of overwhelming and almost terrifying at some point, because it sounds like it requires parents to make a real change. And it's really easy for us to think, oh, we can make this investment, you know, like you said, $200,000 to $300,000 investment for college, and yeah, that's expected of me. But ooh, invest in changing myself and looking at myself. Oh, that takes an emotional investment. That's a little scary.
And you're hitting the nail on the head there, Jed, and I'm smiling to myself, because that's exactly the current challenge, which is why our school system and our business environment and our world is where it is, because that's a reflection of what we're willing to do. And on the one hand, that is totally correct, that it can be incredibly overwhelming and scary. On the other hand, the kind of skills that I work with parents can sometimes be the change of one word in how you're saying something to your child, and you can get a total breakthrough because it's conveying something which you're trying to convey but just don't know how. So, of course, you can go the full hog and actually really delve into it and, you know, explore it and become a kind of like a master at that art. At the same time, it's not that we're really wanting to necessarily learn a whole lot of new things. It's an alignment of what we really do feel for our children, because we do feel strongly towards them and want the best for them. And this is just a kind of like a rewording of some of that alignment so that it conveys that to our child. And of course, if the response and the result is great, our lives are going to be easier. So, you know, it's kind of like someone saying, if you invested $5 of your time and energy and effort, and I would give you a return of $1 million back, you know, that's a great investment. That's a no-brainer. That would motivate people to do it. And that's what we found. We've calculated that sometimes the lack of our own parenting skills cost us in time and money well over $5 million over a 20-year period. I mean, that's a massive amount of money and time.
It is.
I mean, yeah.
Well, give us, you know, you said, and there might be some parents out there who are kind of disbelieving, you said that you can change the way you say one word and change its meaning, or change the way the kid responds to it. Is there an easy example you can give of that?
How much time have you got yet? I can give you a whole lot, but I'll give you two of the ones.
Sure.
The one is more kind of like an emotional intelligent understanding, and uh-huh. the result is maybe less tangible. And then I'll give you another, my favorite skill, which will make a big difference. So you're talking about one word. So we're very familiar with modern psychology that keeps referring to the importance of validating and acknowledging our children's feelings. Mm-hmm. Right? 'Cause there's a big drive now that emotional intelligence and feelings are important. So the psychologists out there say, when your child is sharing something with you or is angry, you need to acknowledge and validate it. So we go and say, let's say we're wanting to have dinner around a table. So as a family, we want to sit down. But your child is watching TV and wants to carry on watching the TV instead of coming to the dinner table. So you remember your notes from your psychology person who says to acknowledge their feelings. So you say to them, honey, I really can understand and see that you're wanting to watch TV, but it's dinner table now. And there you think you've done a really great job. But that word, but, that we put in between the two, uh-huh. honey, I really see that you're wanting to watch TV, but it's dinner time now, is a power word. Mm-hmm. It conveys that whatever you've said before, whatever you've acknowledged, is not as important as dinner table now or it's dinner time now. Mm-hmm. So substitute that word but for at the same time, honey, I see that you really are enjoying your TV. At the same time, it's dinner time now, implies that both what your child is needing or wanting and what you're needing and wanting can coexist at the same time. And just that, your child at a deep emotional level actually hears it differently and is far more likely to respond positively than when they hear the but, which is a power word, and immediately it evokes a sense of confrontation. Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't intellectual. This isn't something which you actually have to think about. You can feel it on that deep emotional level. Mm-hmm. Just changing that changes the dynamic of what's going on. So that's the first example. Can I move on to the next one?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, great. So for me, one of the most exciting areas is how do we get people to cooperate with us? And traditionally, when we want, for example, our children to pack away toys or their bedrooms or there's clothes everywhere and blocks and pens and paper on the tables and everything, we kind of come in and say, you know, Jason, it's time to pack away now. And usually they say like, oh, but I want to carry on playing or not this or not that. And sometimes we give this choice, which is, Jason, you pack away your toys now or else I'm going to take them away for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then we come in with a punitive punishment statement. What I found, the skill that gets the quickest sense of cooperation for about 80% of the time is when you set your boundary and you offer two empowering choices within the boundary. So the same scenario, Jason needs to pack away, and we phrase it, Jason, it's pack away time now. There's your boundary. And now you give them two choices. Jason, would you like to start over here with the blocks or would you like to start over there by your desk? Mm-hmm. So what you're doing is you're stating the boundary and it's short and sweet. Jason, it's pack away time now. We're not saying, Jason, you need to pack away or Jason, you have to pack away or Jason, I need you to pack away. Because if you say all that, it clutters up the whole element of what the boundary is. The boundary is, it's pack away time now. And it's a clean, simple statement. And as soon as you shift onto choices, Jason, would you like to start here by the blocks or over there with the desk? It shifts your child away from negating the boundary you've just said or arguing the boundary with you, but shifts them into choosing. And because they're both empowering choices, in other words, choices that he would most likely want to take, he spends his time and energy in choosing because it saves face. They can actually now make a decision that impacts his life, and it's as though he's not giving in to you. Because if you just say, it's pack away time now, he can say, I don't want to. But when we say, it's pack away time now, would you prefer to start here or prefer to start there? They're empowering choices. Their energy goes into choosing. They feel that they're actually getting what they're needing in some way. And you get like amazing instant cooperation. That just, it's fantastic to watch. And we've had so much feedback from people around the world in diverse cultures that just that skill alone has saved them well over 20 minutes to an hour per day, every day. I mean, that's a massive amount of time just mm-hmm. by changing a sentence like that.
You know, it makes perfect sense. And I think if parents would look at it, I think a lot of the times when parents come in and you know, they're rigid, it's time to do this and, you know, put that boundary up, that turns kids off and makes kids defensive. A lot of times that comes from the fact that the parents are a little nervous, and you know, they want to avoid a confrontation. They think the way to avoid the confrontation is going in there with the big guns and like, hey, I'm the boss and this is what we have to do. And you're finding the opposite is true. If you go in there and you just, hey, we're not going to have a confrontation, this is it, and here's a choice, and it's an empowering choice.
Because that empowering choice, what it actually conveys at a deep level, Jed, is it's saying this is what needs to be done. And then there's no negotiation about it, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, this is what needs to be done. But you know what? I'm also on your side. So I also want this to work for you. So would you prefer to start here or would you prefer to start there? It's conveying your interest in your child also feeling that they're part of the solution as opposed to just being the problem. Mm-hmm. And if you can align your communication to convey that, you will have a totally different relationship with your child. And that is absolutely amazing. It opens up a whole different scenario.
It's great. You know, it makes perfect sense to me. You know, I think words are very important, and how we deliver them are very important. Certainly, I know on stage, you know, the way yes. that I use different words, it can, you know, and just a change of tone. I often give an example to performers. I have a levitation illusion, and when I introduce it, in different ways depending on who and how old the child is. It's going to be part of it. If it's an older child, then I can kind of present it with a, you know, mysterious, now you're going to float in the air in a way that you won't believe, and kind of add a little element of danger. Whereas if I do that with a second grader, they'll run off the stage and be terrified. And we, you know, we can say the same words in a different way that will allow the child to feel safe. And it's really important the way we use our words. And like you said, it can save so much time and energy and actually help you and your child grow closer together. And you're modeling that respect that I talk about in this show all the time. You know, you want your kids to be respectful of others. A great way to teach that is to be respectful of your kids, of your children.
Correct. And that for me is, you know, the most important thing. And it's actually quite ironic because you were chatting earlier about, you know, what I actually call the modern parenting day crisis, which is this belief that, well, my parents were really strict with me and it didn't work so well for me. So I'm going to try and be more liberal and flexible with my children. Mm-hmm. But now we're not quite sure about the boundaries. So we hesitate. So we're nervous. And of mm-hmm. course, what we've got currently is the modern day emergence of what we call the brat. We see brat-like behavior increasing tenfold everywhere worldwide because there's this huge sense of entitlement that these young people just believe they're owed everything. Mm-hmm. And it's creating a crisis, both for education teachers, but also parents are saying, hang on, this just isn't right. I've also got needs as a parent in this, and I also want my child to cooperate with me. And that's the great thing about what I do is, and this is where the irony comes in, is I'm probably the most, I don't want to say strict, but the person who has the most consistent boundaries uh-huh. and has the most, should we say enforceable boundaries mm-hmm. than anyone else I know. But the thing is, people still love me for doing that because for me, it's not about the boundary, but how I'm implementing it with the respect. And as you said, if I'm modeling that and really can convey that this is also what I want for everyone else and for it to work for everyone, suddenly it's not about the boundary, but we're all thriving off it. And that's the trick which we as parents can radically learn, such that you actually can get what you're wanting and your child will actually feel grateful for you in that process.
What a beautiful life that would be. What talk about bringing harmony to your family. And you know, I know lots of parents who, you know, like, oh, everything is a battle and everything is you know, an upset and turmoil, and just changing a few words and changing the way you present things and communicate to your kids can make such a difference in their life and in your family's life. So much. We could talk forever. This is fascinating, and it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. I want to encourage everybody. You know, Robin's website is chock full of information. There's a blog, there are online workshops, there's ebooks, and you can find it all at robinbooth.co.za or ZA, as I said. And what are some of the, I know you also do some online classes through the Udemy learning platform.
Correct. So you, as we say, Udemy here, Udemy. But the Udemy or U-D-E-M-Y. So that was a great platform for to host my workshops, where a parent can obviously sign up to any of them. We've got quite a variety there at the moment, ranging from how to avoid raising a brat who is unlikable, to how to get cooperation, how to use the star charts we've invented, some amazing stuff. We actually use them more on adults than on young children, through to what does your child need to know or want to know from you before you die. I mean, that's a bit of a strange topic to talk about, but mm-hmm. it's a really, really important one. And it's just a great platform for a parent or a teacher to actually go and learn at home in their own time, in their own space, and they have lifelong access, which means, you know, once you're on, you've got it for life. You can review it, see all the updates, ask questions in the forum. There's cheat sheets, summary printouts, and that's obviously just a great platform. I mean, we've got some other platforms, but that one seems to be a really well-known one, and it actually seems to be working really well. So you can see all those links from my website as well, and there are often specials on those as well.
Well, we'll make sure, and if you don't understand my explanation of the website address, make sure you go to wechooserespect.com. There'll be links there and on the blog post, and I am a huge advocate of online learning. It really is, I think, a great way to learn. And Robin, it's been great having you here. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I hope we have a chance to speak again.
Jed, it's been really great chatting to you, and I really acknowledge you for what you're doing and for just that fundamental value of respect makes a big difference, and it's the way for us to go.
Amen. Thank you so much, Robin Booth, ladies and gentlemen. Big thanks going out to Robin Booth. Big thanks going out to you for loving your kids. Loving your kids is going to make all the difference in the world. Here's my friend, Chris Hardy, Space Cats.
Mind up.